Well, welcome to another edition of Hank Unplugged, the podcast that is committed to bringing the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people directly to you via the podcast. And today is no exception in that I'm going to be talking to Abby Johnson. She's the founder of an organization that is called And Then There Were None. We're going to talk about that and much, much more as we discuss the painful subject of abortion. I've often said that abortion is the painful killing of an innocent human being. Each word is instructive. Abortion is painful for the child because, well, the methods employed involved burning and smothering and dismembering and crushing. It's painful killing in that from the very beginning, that which is terminated fulfills the criteria that is necessary for establishing the existence of biological life. So it's the painful killing, and then of an innocent. Innocent, that word is important in that a preborn child deserves protection, not capital punishment. And this is an innocent human being, in that the child who is killed is the offspring of human parents and has a totally distinct genetic code. Abortion is nothing short of terminating the life of a person created in the image and likeness of God. So abortion is the painful killing of an innocent human being. And no one has dealt with this subject more ably than Abby Johnson. She's the author of a nationally best-selling book. It's titled Unplanned. It's the dramatic true story of a former Planned Parenthood leader's eye-opening journey across a barrier, across the lifeline. Once she was pro-abortion, now she is pro-life. She's also featured in a film that precipitated my desire to do this podcast with Abby Johnson. The film, based on her book, is also titled Unplanned, and quite frankly, I watched it and wept. She was also a featured speaker at the GOP National Convention, and so I am so delighted to have her today as my special guest on Hank Unplugged. I am sincerely grateful that you took the time to be on the podcast, Abby.
Of course, yeah. Thanks so much for having me on.
You are most welcome. And the first thing I want to ask you about is your organization. Tell me about the organization, And Then There Were None.
Yeah, we are basically an organization that provides comprehensive help to men and women who, you know, they recognize that there's evil inside of the abortion industry and they want to leave. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, I mean, what's the big deal? It's a job. They can just leave. But leaving the abortion industry is, it's not like leaving, a job at McDonald's or a job at an insurance agency. There's a lot of spiritual warfare that they face. The abortion clinic is going to make it very difficult for them to get another job. They'll give them poor references. And sometimes they might find themselves in court. Planned Parenthood took me to court, trying to get a gag order on me after I left my job. And so, you know, we are just a team that rallies around them to provide them whatever sort of assistance they may need whenever they do walk away from the industry.
Talk about the magnitude of Planned Parenthood. A lot of people don't have a good concept of just how powerful, how large, and how well-funded this organization is.
Sure. I mean, we're talking about a multi-billion dollar organization that is funded in part by American taxpayer dollars. They are funded by our country's wealthiest people, Warren Buffett, George Soros, And so they have, you know, the best marketing team, the best strategist, the best researchers. They're a very powerful organization with, you know, lawyers surrounding them, and it can be very intimidating for someone who leaves the industry, you know, for someone who wants to speak out. And they seem to be pretty Teflon coated. You know, I mean, just think about all of the scandals that have come out about this organization. And every single time, it's like these bullets just, they don't even stick. They just shear right off of them. And, you know, I mean, I think everybody sort of thought, okay, you know, when all of the videos came out about the body parts, aborted body parts being sold, everybody thought, okay, this is it. You know, this is what's going to finally take them down. And no, then the people who outed them ended up being prosecuted. So, I mean, it's like, what does it take to finally take down this Goliath of an industry?
I want to talk for a moment about your own entry into this industry. I mean, this is an incredible thing. You're a young woman. You're at a particular event, and you're recruited as a volunteer. How did you get involved, and what was your role within Planned Parenthood?
Yeah, I was in college and, you know, didn't really know much about Planned Parenthood. I didn't grow up hearing about abortion really one way or the other, didn't grow up hearing about Planned Parenthood. And, you know, met a woman. She had this table that just had all this hot pink stuff all over it, you know, paraphernalia all over it. And so it sort of drew me over to it. And she started talking to me about the organization and, you know, telling me about all of these great things that they do and services that they provide and how they're there to help women and women in crisis and low income women. And, you know, essentially spinning the same propaganda now 20 years ago that they are still spinning today. That without them, low-income women would have nowhere else to go for health care, and that they're about, you know, reducing the number of abortions. And, you know, and so at the time, sort of being this young, you know, I don't know, ideologue, I thought, well, gosh, this sounds good. I mean, who wouldn't be for keeping abortions rare? Who wouldn't be for reducing the number of abortions? Who wouldn't be for, you know, low-income women having access to health care? And so, you know, I started volunteering at the clinic, just doing whatever they needed me to do, truly believing that I was helping women.
Eventually, you rose through the ranks. You became the director of a clinic. And then you were awarded Planned Parenthood's Employee of the Year, and you received the Margaret Sanger Award, an award named for the birth mother of Planned Parenthood. So you were not just a tangential employee within a big organization. I mean, you rose to a high level, a high position within the organization. Once you get there, how hard is it to get to the point where you can walk out? What would it take for you to leave an organization like that? The money is good. The prestige is good. You get the award. You're recognized by your peers. And now you're going to leave. What would cause you to do that?
So there's a couple of things, but ultimately I was called in to assist in a different type of abortion procedure. It was an abortion procedure that was done during a live ultrasound. And I watched as a 13-week-old baby fought and struggled for his life during that abortion procedure. And I knew then that there was life in the womb, that there was humanity inside of the womb, that we were not just talking about mere tissue or waste or something to be discarded, that this was life. And I knew that I was on the wrong side of this debate. I was on the wrong side of defense. And I ended up making a decision to leave the organization. And that was when they tried to silence me. They tried to get a gag order against me because I had, you know, indeed, risen through the ranks. I had won these awards. I knew their dirty laundry. I knew their secrets. And they tried to keep me quiet by getting a permanent order of injunction against me. That failed in the court system. And now I spend my life going out and educating the public about abortion, I find that so many people around us, they truly don't know the reality of abortion. I think that, you know, those of us in the pro-life movement and maybe who have been raised in the pro-life movement, we sort of take our knowledge for granted. But after I spoke at the Republican National Convention, I mean, I had hundreds and hundreds of messages in my email box of people just saying, Abby, that's the first time I've ever heard anyone describe an abortion. I mean, people around us, they truly don't know. And so when we have this information inside of us, it's really our duty to share it with those around us, because the reality is that people don't know what abortion is. They don't know what it does to the unborn child, and they don't know what it does to these women.
Yeah, that's a great point, Abby. One of the connections that you made at the GOP National Convention, and let me just for a moment read what you said. I looked at the transcript. You said that a physician asked you to assist with an ultrasound-guided abortion, and nothing prepared you for what you saw on the screen. You saw an unborn baby fighting back. That baby is desperate to move away from suction. And you say you'll never forget what the doctor said. The doctor said, "Beam me up, Scotty." And the last thing that you saw on the ultrasound was a spine twirling around in a mother's womb before succumbing to the force of the suction. Once you see that, I suppose this is no longer some esoteric debate. It's something that is real. It's something that is, to use the phrase that you alluded to earlier, it's something that is living. This is a real life. And it's not just a real life, but it is millions and millions of real lives that are dispensed with each and every year.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, and that's what I talked about in my speech. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people, we talk about abortion and we think, oh, that's something that happens to other people. Or it's, you know, it's a thought, it's an idea. But for me, for someone who has seen abortion, for someone who has seen that tiny spine circling around inside of his mother's womb, I mean, this is very real for me. This is very tangible for me. And, you know, for the 60 million plus lives who have been lost in the name of choice since 1973, the over million babies' lives that will be lost just this year in the name of choice, over 2,400 every single day just in our country. I mean, these are real lives. These are real women who are laying on these clinic tables. And it's real loss. And it's really happening right down the street in our neighborhoods. And yet people go about their daily lives as though murders aren't taking place around the corner. And, you know, I mean, what type of depraved society do we live in? I mean, if this was happening to two-year-olds, people would be, you know, boarding up the doors of these places. There would be, you know, mass protests so that no one would be able to walk their toddlers in to take the lives of their two-year-old toddlers. But because of the simple location and size, because these babies are inside of a mother's womb, because they are tiny, we pretend that these children don't have equal dignity and equal worth as a two-year-old toddler. And, I mean, what a depraved society we live in.
80%, you point out, 80% of Planned Parenthood abortion facilities are strategically, and you make that point emphatically, they're strategically located in minority neighborhoods. And you have, through that statement, made a connection between abortion and racism. And that's a very real connection. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. Well, I mean, we know the founder of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger. She was a woman who practiced eugenics. She believed in eugenic principles. She founded Planned Parenthood really for the sole purpose of eliminating minority populations through widespread access to contraception and abortion. And currently we see her dreams coming to fruition. As you stated, 80% of Planned Parenthood abortion facilities are located in minority, primarily African American neighborhoods. This is a business decision for them. They look at the population. They're not interested in helping these minority populations get out of the enslavement of the government welfare system. They're interested in keeping them on it because that's what lines their budget. That's what lines their pocketbooks.
Margaret Sanger famously said that the most merciful thing that a large family can do for its infant members is to kill it. And she was, as you point out, Abby, committed to eugenics, the science of being well-born. And the whole idea behind eugenics was to identify people who were not well-born and then to stop them from breeding by isolation in institutions or by sterilization. And the connection between eugenics, and I've talked about this often on my broadcast, the connection between eugenics and evolution is a very real connection, because 19th century scientists were hypothesizing that the gene pool was being corrupted by the less fit genes of inferior people. And their supposition was that for evolution to succeed, it was as crucial that the unfit die as that the fittest survive. Because if the unfit survived indefinitely, they'd continue to infect the fit with their less fit genes, and the result is that fit genes are corrupted and evolution is compromised. But I think making this connection, as you have, in many different ways and in many different forums, including being a featured speaker at the GOP National Convention, I think this is a very salient and powerful point. And I think it hits right squarely in the middle of what people are talking about when they're talking about social justice.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Well, and particularly with all of the racial tension that we see currently in our country, I thought, you know, everybody is talking about, you know, civil rights and everyone is talking about social justice. And I'm thinking, how can we even talk about social justice when we are snuffing out our most marginalized, our most vulnerable in the womb to the tune of 2,400 a day? And then when you look at the disproportionate number of African-American children that are being killed in the womb every single day, and then the proponents of the organization Black Lives Matter, who are out here saying that they are for civil rights of the African-Americans, are the ones that are huge proponents of abortion. So it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's foolishness. And so I felt like whenever I was asked to make my remarks at the convention, I thought I had to bring out what Margaret Sanger was about, what the foundations of Planned Parenthood were about, and how that foundation, the foundations of Margaret Sanger, are being actively carried out today in the way that they build and locate their facilities.
You know, Abby, I watched your movie Unplanned while I was on an airplane this weekend. And I have to say, I couldn't keep myself from crying. I was so moved as I watched some of the parts of that movie. Particularly, I'm thinking about the part in the movie where in a particular room called the Pieces of Children's Room, the workers are actually reassembling infant corpses. And intellectually, I knew about that, but when I actually saw that being portrayed on film, it just reduced me to tears.
Yeah, you know, it was, there were a few scenes in the film that were, it was really important for me to keep them in there and to keep them accurate. And I mean, the film was very accurate, but there were certain parts, and that one was one in particular, where I wanted to make sure that we did not take any liberties, because abortion is bad enough as it is. And I didn't feel like we needed to exaggerate at all. And what was interesting to me was, and one of the sort of the litmus tests for me, so when we had a raw edit of the film, because, you know, I had been out of the industry for 9 years when the raw edit of the film came out. And so there was still some time for us to make some edits and changes. And so, you know, my memory is 9 years removed from the abortion industry by that time. And so I gathered some of the abortion clinic workers who had come through, and then there were none, but who had left the industry very recently. And I said, I want you to sit down and watch this movie, but I want you to watch it from the lens of someone who just left the industry, because I want to be sure that in these particular scenes, you don't see anything that is over-exaggerated or exaggerated at all. And in those key scenes, and that one being one of them in particular, I remember them looking at me and saying, no, Abby, that's exactly what it looked like. That's exactly what it was like. And that was really important to me because I wanted people to see what it actually looks like inside of an abortion clinic. I wanted people to actually experience what I experienced in that moment, to try to bring some sort of justice, some sort of humanity back to these children that are being killed every year.
How do you process this? I mean, how do you process young women in an abortion clinic reassembling a child? I mean, it's so horrific, it's hard to process, and yet somehow or other, people are able to do it. What do you think allows a person to reassemble the corpse of an aborted child?
Oh, it's just, it's blindness. I mean, it's sin, it's a spiritual blindness. Sometimes spiritual blindness can lead us to physical blindness. A lot of times it's a justification of sin. About 70% of abortion clinic workers have had abortions themselves. So it's a justification, trying to justify their own sin of abortion. So much of it is spiritual blindness and just not being able to see really what is right in front of them, quite literally.
How satisfying is it for you to have brought some 600 or more workers out of the abortion industry?
You know, it's very satisfying. It brings me great joy to know that there are over 600 people who are walking in freedom and that just feel the same joy that I feel living outside of the walls of the abortion industry and living in the freedom of Christ and not having to live with that burden anymore. It brings me great joy. And you know, it helps me, I think, just recognizing that God can really, he can use anything from our past for his glory.
Yeah, you talk about the freedom that Christ brings. Maybe you can personalize that. I mean, what's it like not only to have been involved in the industry, but as a woman to be involved in having an abortion and yet recognizing that Christ can bring a freedom to you, a freedom from the bondage of guilt and pain and the deception and everything else that is part and parcel of the abortion industry?
Well, I mean, we all have to make a choice. I mean, you know, we all have sin in our life. That's why Christ came. And so, you know, we all have to make a choice. I had to make a choice. I had not only aborted two of my own children, but had participated in over 22,000 abortions. And so I had to make a decision. You know, did I want to live in my past, the place where Satan runs rampant, where chaos lives, where shame and guilt live? Or did I want to live in the present, in today, this gift that God had given me and use my past for his glory? And you know, it took time. It took practice. I had to give myself a lot of grace. But I always tell people, if he can forgive me, if he can forgive someone like me, he can forgive anyone, and he wants to. That's his desire. He doesn't want us to live in our past sin. He doesn't want us to wallow in our past. He wants to live in his freedom and his forgiveness.
You've alluded to this throughout the podcast, Abby, but I want you to really underscore how significant this issue is. If you think of the building blocks of a civil society, marriage and church and government, they all rest atop the foundation of human life. So this is not just a issue. I mean, Francis Schaeffer once called it the watershed issue of our time. So this is an issue that I think people have been anesthetized to. I mean, abortion has been talked about so frequently in so many forms that people have abortion fatigue and they don't recognize the significance each and every moment of this Holocaust in our midst.
Yeah, you're right. I think a lot of people just believe, well, it's settled. You know, we've had abortion in our country for almost 50 years through Roe v. Wade, and so it's just settled law. But I don't believe that that's the case at all. I mean, I've been listening today to the hearing of Amy Coney Barrett, and I can't tell you how many times Roe v. Wade has come up throughout this hearing. Roe v. Wade is not settled law of the land, nor will it ever be settled law of the land, because it is an unjust ruling. And we must continue to fight against what is unjust. And the killing of the unborn, the killing of the innocent, will always be unjust. And so it must always remain unsettled. You know, without the basic right to life, all other rights really come secondary. And in our country, as it stands right now, we don't have that fundamental right to life. And so we have to continue to fight for the rights of our children. It's a cycle of dehumanization. When you're willing to marginalize the most vulnerable among you, and undoubtedly there's no one more vulnerable, more defenseless than the unborn, you will begin to devalue the other marginalized groups among you. And we already see that happening, the disabled, the elderly, and other groups. They will certainly start coming under persecution as well. And so if we don't start fighting back and start fighting back rigorously, people will start to be persecuted as well.
How significant are sonograms to the abortion issue? I mean, where people can actually not only hear a beating heart, but actually see a baby in the mother's womb, and in the case of abortion, see the baby fighting against the abortion process.
Yeah, they're pretty important. Ultrasounds in pregnancy centers are significant in women choosing life for their children. So what they say now is national average is about 85%. So if a woman in a pregnancy center can see her child on an ultrasound, 85% of the time she will choose life. Hmm. And that's why, you know, groups like Planned Parenthood fight tooth and nail against ultrasound legislation at the state level, because they know that the ultrasound exposes the lie of the abortion industry, that inside of a woman's womb is an individual human baby with a beating heart.
So last question, Abby, what do you do when someone says, this is a woman's right, she can do what she wants to do with her own body? No one should tell a woman what she can do with her own physicality. What's your response to that?
Well, I would say that would be true if a woman was aborting herself, but she's not aborting herself. She is aborting a separate human being. A woman, while she's pregnant, does not have two hearts. She does not have 20 fingers and 20 toes. She's aborting an individual human being with an individual right to life. And our right to life and our right to end a life should stop where another life begins. And there is a separate human life inside of that woman's body.
Abby, just as you did at the GOP National Convention, where you were able to take a very complex issue and codify it succinctly, so it not only gave us information, but it also gave us the emotive power by which we are willing to do something about this, not just hear or clap, but march. You were able to do the same thing in this podcast today, and for that, I'm deeply grateful. God has gifted you as a communicator, and I pray that He will continue to mightily use you for His glory and for the extension of His kingdom on this, the watershed issue of our time. So thank you so much for what you're doing.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me on.
You are welcome, Abby. And of course, for those listening in, this issue is not an issue that's going to go away anytime soon, and we have to continue to find ways in which we can be involved. And I think one of the things that will help motivate you to be involved is to watch the film that I was talking about earlier, Unplanned. It is a powerful film. Also, you may want to read the best-selling book by Abby Johnson, Unplanned, and, you know, support organizations like And Then There Were None, organizations that are on the cutting edge of this most significant of subjects. We'll be talking about this more on future editions of Hank Unplugged on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Certainly, we write about this continuously in different ways, attacking it from different angles in the Christian Research Journal. So my desire is that you continue to stand with this organization, the Christian Research Institute, prayerfully and financially. And by the way, for your support of our ministry, we would be happy to send you the nationally best-selling book, Unplanned, by Abby Johnson. And thanks so much for tuning in to this edition of Hank Unplugged.